You're listening to the We Lead Well podcast, where well-being matters. This episode is brought to you in partnership with Transform Education Coaching, headteacherchats.com, and the Teach Well Alliance. Enjoy the show. Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the We Lead Well podcast. This week, I've got an absolutely fascinating interview with Dr. Christian van Nieuwenberg, who is, amongst other things, which he will tell you about in the interview, a professor in coaching and positive psychology at the University of East London. He is really focused on, in everything he does, improving the lives of young people. And I think that this is what we all want to achieve as educators. And the way that we can do this is by creating the conditions in which teachers and leaders can be at their best. And that's why well-being in schools is so important. And I found it really interesting that Christian says that he promotes coaching, not because he's obsessed with coaching, but because he wants to improve education. And a significant amount of research now is telling us that coaching does enhance education, and it really works to improve teaching, well-being and pupil outcomes. So I'm sure you'd be really interested to find out how you can implement and create a coaching culture in your schools from Christian. So here he is. Enjoy the interview. Christian van Nieuwenberg, welcome to the show. It's an absolute privilege to have you join us today. Thank you very much. How are you doing?
Thank you, Victoria. I'm doing really well. Looking forward to this conversation and really grateful to you for the work you do on this podcast. I think it's just so wonderful that you go out and collect really interesting ideas and concepts and then present them in this way. So thank you very much for what you do, Victoria.
Oh, thank you. You're welcome. It's nice to hear that people are grateful for what I do. So you've had a very varied and diverse career. Can you give the listeners a flavour of that and then let them know what it is you do currently?
Okay, well, maybe very flavorful then, if I may. So I've done lots of things. You know, our family business was a restaurant. It was a Japanese restaurant. So I do think there's a connection. That's why I'm going to share this. So it's a family restaurant, a Japanese restaurant. I used to manage the front of house of that restaurant from, you know, when I was probably 14. I've spent some time acting as a translator. I've been a journalist. I had a press card, and I used to also be a gopher for journalists. I've been in sales and marketing. I've worked for the Royal Shakespeare Company here in England. I was a breakfast waiter when I first came here. Working in the Grosvenor Hotel in Stratford-on-Avon. I worked in Waterstones as a bookseller. I loved that job. So yeah, it's been varied. The roles that really I got passionate about were teaching. So I did start off teaching first as a substitute teacher, then as a high school teacher in an American school, teaching English literature. And that's where I learned an interesting lesson, because at that time I was probably more interested in the content. I was more passionate about English literature than about creating learning opportunities. So it didn't go well, to be honest. Then I worked for the Royal Shakespeare Company for a number of years, because I've studied, my PhD is actually in Elizabethan drama.
Oh, right.
So I worked for the Royal Shakespeare Company in a marketing role as well. I also sold tickets. So I feel I've done a lot of things. I've worked in local authorities in England, working within the education sections of local authorities. And most recently, I work at University of East London, and my role there is Professor of Coaching and Positive Psychology, And I'm also the executive director of a global coach training provider that's specifically for the education sector called Growth Coaching International. And I do some other things on the side. So what connects all of them is probably a passion for the giving young people, particularly, but not only, but giving young people as many life chances as possible through education. And I think the route to that, to successful learning opportunities for young people, is to work with educators and really unlock their potential to unlock the potential of the people that they work with. So I think there is a kind of a through line of being interested in as many life chances as possible for as many young people as possible.
Wow, that is a resume and a half, isn't it? So you lead the International Centre for Coaching in Education now, don't you, as well? Can you tell us a bit about that as well?
Yeah, so the International Centre for Coaching in Education, that's my own personal business. It's there so that I can do interesting bits of work when they emerge. My main driver is to be of value to educators. So that's an independent thing. And it's really just there so that if there's a particular project that I want to sneak in, I can do it through that. Most of my time right now is split across Growth Coaching International, which is a global organization based in Sydney. So, for example, this morning I've been up early to have some meetings over in Australia. And the University of East London. And through both of those organizations, I feel I'm having a broader impact than just focusing on my own business. So I do have a business. And at about 10 years ago, I think my dream was that I just work for myself. But what I found is I was working myself harder than any employer ever would, which was kind of interesting. And the driving thing for me, Victoria, has been how can I be of greatest service? And I found that these two organizations, GCI and UEL, just do allow me to connect with more people.
I was looking at some of the work that the Growth International do, and one of the things is the coaching communities, isn't it, within a school, that it's not just about working with staff, it's about working with pupils as well, and how you can create that sense of a whole school community where coaching is at the heart of everything that a school does. Can you tell me a bit more about how that works in a school?
I'd like to tell you more about that, Victoria. Thank you for asking that question. So people have often said to me, Christian, you seem to be completely obsessed with coaching. and it's not that. I'm not obsessed with coaching. I'm more obsessed with education. And I'm only interested in coaching because I think it can allow us to really make a huge difference. So that's my entry point, is how can we make education better? And I think I've spent the last 12 or so years of my life looking at coaching because I'm convinced that coaching has more to offer. And of course, it's already being used and used incredibly well in some parts of the world and some schools. I think there's still huge potential. So that what you're referring to is something that I developed with colleagues, Jim Knight, Dr. Jim Knight, who's based in the US, and my good friend and colleague, John Campbell, who's based in Australia. Back in 2010, I was asked to teach a module called Coaching in Education as part of the Masters at University of East London, Masters of Coaching Psychology it was. And at that time, one of the things I wanted to do was create a textbook around coaching in education. And that gave me a great opportunity because I just edited the book and I went out to everybody I knew who was doing work in this area and wrote to them to say, what do you do around coaching and education? Because I'm writing a book. And that gave me the opportunity to connect with people all over the place, including Jim Knight. And what I realized when I was working on that book is that we weren't talking to each other globally, or even, you know, even smaller than that. We really weren't communicating. There was excellent practice going on in some schools. There wasn't that much communication between schools. But I also noticed that what was being researched in the US wasn't really being referred to here in the UK. And what was happening in Australia wasn't really getting the attention it deserved. So one of the things that emerged from that thinking was what we've called the global framework for coaching and mentoring in education. And the idea was, it's almost, this is like a playing field. And we're saying, everybody who wants to play in this area, everybody who's interested in how can coaching and mentoring enhance what we do in schools, colleges, and universities, this is where to play, so that we're moving against any tendency to try to say this is the right way of doing it or our way is the correct way. And instead, we're trying to gather what everybody's doing. And when we did that, it emerged that there was practice and research in four key areas. And so the global framework has four components. One area, and probably at the time that I started doing this, it had the most interest, was how is coaching being used with educational leadership to make things better in schools? And so there is research to support that, and there's work going on in that area. Examples are, and I think you do some of this work yourself, Victoria, but either providing coaching to school leaders, that's one example, yep. But also integrating coach training in leadership development programs for educators. Yep. So the way we're starting to imagine it is, there's lots of ways we can use coaching to enhance, ultimately, student outcomes and student well-being. And one of them is, let's work with leaders. So that's one quadrant. And there's a good amount of research to support the use of coaching for leadership in educational settings. Then, if we move over to another popular quadrant, that is, how do you improve not just teaching practice, but primarily teaching practice? But I also want to include the work of other professionals in schools, colleges, and universities. So how do you improve the professional practice of educators and other staff who work in these settings is another area of interest. Again, there's a lot of work going on here, and there's another good amount of research to show that interventions in these areas are having beneficial impacts. So what are examples of these? Peer coaching between educators. So the idea of training both parties in foundational coaching skills so that perhaps they can observe each other or watch a video of each other's teaching and provide peer support. So that's one example. Other examples are when we provide coaching skills training to learning support assistants or others that may help them in their professional practice. Other examples would be teachers learning about coaching so that they can bring those practices into their classroom. So this area is, how can we use coaching to enhance professional practice? And these two areas, Victoria, as you know, if you look in the broader education literature, often there's arguments about which is more important. Sometimes people say the most important thing is good leadership in every educational institution. So there would be a strong case to say, if we enhance the leadership in these institutions, it's going to lead to better outcomes for students eventually. Or, and there's again, a similar amount of convincing research to show that what you really want is the idea of a good teacher in every classroom. And when I say teacher, I mean all the support staff and all the educators, as it were. But the idea of if we can have highly skilled, confident practitioners in every classroom who are also experiencing well-being, that's the most important thing we can do. And I'm not sure where I land on those. Ideally, let's have both, I would say. So those are the two quadrants. The third quadrant, where I've done some research and I think is an area where we could be doing even more, is working directly with students. So that's the third quadrant. Less research than in the other two quadrants that I've mentioned, but encouraging initial research. And this is where we're thinking, how can we use coaching directly with students, not through leaders, not through educators, but directly with students to lead to student success and well-being? And that is, for example, training students to be coaches, to coach other students. And that's been very promising.
Can I just ask there, sorry to interrupt you, Christian, what age do you think it's appropriate? Because there's a tendency to think that older pupils benefit more. So starting with maybe sixth form students who can understand the process and understand some of the methods more effectively. I would like to think we can start much younger than that, but I'm interested to know at what age you would say that coaching becomes something that pupils will engage with.
Yeah, so I'll give you a two-part answer to this, Victoria, because I got this wrong in the sense that I made the assumption that you've alluded to now. And remember, my experience of teaching was in high school as well, or secondary school. So my initial assumption going into this is that we need to be talking about the older students. And we actually did some research into this, which was, and in the research, we always focused on 16 to 18 year old students. And the idea was we trained 16 to 18 year old students to coach other students in the school. And there were good outcomes. So the outcomes were that those we trained to be coaches got some benefits, as well as the recipients of coaching.
Yeah.
So the ones we trained to be coaches, which was my area of focus, had increased emotional intelligence scores. They had increases in their attitude to learning. And they anecdotally, they talked about feeling more confident, being more empathetic, etc. So initially, I made the mistake of thinking, well, we need to kind of retain it at this level. Subsequently, so from the research side, then I'll talk to you about the practitioner side. Subsequently, a good colleague of mine called Mary Briggs, who's at Oxford, yeah, Brookes University, she works in the Department of Education there. She was a primary specialist or elementary school specialist, and she convinced me that maybe we could work in elementary schools as well. I have to be honest, I was a bit skeptical at first, but we've actually worked with year five and year six, fifth or sixth grade, we might say, students, pupils. And there, it wasn't training them to be coaches, but we did train them in coaching related skills, like listening, asking, you know, open questions. And that, we did some research about that, which has convinced me that we can start much younger in coach training. So that's, in terms of the research, there is now a little bit of research around its use at university level, at top end of secondary or high school level, and also top end of primary or elementary. Now, in practice, what's interesting is, in some of those schools where we worked with year five and year six children, those schools got back in touch with us later to say, you know, we're even using it in year one or year two, wow, which was amazing. And just to give you an example, in year one, it's this idea of listening and giving encouraging feedback was the skill. And so when they did self-portraits, so they would do, the children would do self-portraits of one another. But part of it that was built into it was listening to another child talk about their self-portrait and why they've drawn it that way and ways of giving feedback. So it's been really encouraging from practice. And where I've learned most about it is from my colleagues actually in New Zealand. So Growth Coaching International in New Zealand, they've done some groundbreaking work, as well as in Australia, we've been doing some work as well. But one of the, you know, highlight moments of my professional career was when I went on to a conference in New Zealand, and based on the research that I'd done, they were training younger secondary school students, so maybe 12, 13-year-olds. They were training them to coach and one another. And at this conference that I went to, which was for school leaders, and there were probably 200 school leaders in the room, one school brought some of these young coaches along. And these coaches were spread out across all of the conference tables. So there would be 8 school leaders, one 13, 14-year-old student. And this student would sit at the table and say, who'd like to be coached, and demonstrated coaching, where they were coaching a school leader. It's just amazing. And the thing I've taken away from that is afterwards, I went to some of these amazing young people and said to them, you know, in addition to being able to coach, what's been good about learning to become a coach? And the thing I still remember is this one girl said, you know, I think I'm a better friend now as a result of the coach training. So what's really powerful for me about this idea of working directly with students is, I think, as Victoria, you'll know, you know, we're learning communication skills. We're learning skills of building relationships. So in other words, these are lifelong skills. And so that's what's exciting for me about thinking, how can we empower students to learn coaching skills so that they can use them at points of transition? Because for me, Victoria, coaching is really about transitions. So that's why what you said is relevant. I think the earlier we can get it down, the earlier we can start talking about coaching skills, the more students will be able to use those skills in the various educational transitions, let alone life transitions they're going to be experiencing, not just through education, but throughout their lives.
And that go on.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that also applies to teachers, doesn't it? That if we start to coach, and I'm quite interested in this at the moment, looking at early careers teaching, and there's quite a lot of emphasis on mentoring programs and training mentors. But I think as teachers start to develop, coaching becomes possibly more powerful than mentoring. And I think that's really important to get that started as early as possible in a teacher's career, so that they're constantly understanding and know what their purpose is and what their why is. Yeah. And that's one of the things I was going to mention to you about working with staff in schools and teachers and the link to well-being, because for me, I think coaching really, it brings a teacher back to why they're in the classroom and what their purpose is and what they're doing. It's not just come in, work, drive in, go in, teach a few lessons and drive home, mark a few books. It's like you're saying, it's that vocation, it's that wanting to have an impact on the lives of young people and make a difference in young people's lives and open doors for them and create opportunities. And for me, the reason that coaching is so important to well-being is that it brings teachers back to their why. It brings them back to that sense of, actually, this is why I'm here, for the children. And once they understand that and they can start taking responsibility for it, they become more passionate about the delivery of their subject and their subject knowledge and all those other things. Would you agree with that? Before we find out whether Christian does agree with me on that, I'd just like to tell you a little bit about our partner, headteacherchat.com. HeadTeacherChat discusses lots of topics, from how to support pupils with learning, how to support parents, and the many issues that come with leading a school. The aim of HeadTeacherChat is to support headteachers and school leaders who are in a challenging and often lonely role. They do this by offering lots of information for schools to tap into. For example, they have lots of fantastic education companies on their database for leaders to discover, as well as leadership templates to download. They've written product reviews for leaders who are looking for products for their school. And this year, they've even launched the very first school leader planner, especially designed to help leaders to be productive and organised. If you'd like to hear more about HeadTeacherChat, you can find them on their website at www.headteacherchat.com. HeadTeacherChat. It's what headteachers are talking about. Now let's get back to the interview.
I think you phrased that really well. The way that we organize education currently in many advanced industrialized nations does lead to what you said. The day-to-day becomes get in the car, get things done. The busyness of a school is, you know, unfathomable to many people who don't work in schools. It's pretty full on, right from probably when the educator wakes up till, you know, they get home, and then the day isn't over when they get home. So one of the things that I think is challenging is that there's just not enough time for reflection. So from that point of view, the why can sometimes get lost because I'm battling a mountain of marking, or I've got something else to do. So what a powerful question that a coach could ask is, tell me what got you into teaching in the first place. I think that's the kind of thing that helps people to connect back to the why. So that's one thing. The other thing is, educators are people who think for a living, and you've got to think on your feet. That's one of the things. They're professionals who think for a living. So doing the thinking for them is actually disrespectful and disempowering. It is disempowering. So I agree with you. In terms of the professional development of educators, coaching to me seems to be one of the most powerful ways of supporting professional development. Now, let's talk about coaching and mentoring for a minute. Because mentoring is effective, and mentoring is a wonderful way of shortcutting things, getting information across pretty quickly, of passing expertise and experience from one group to another. It does a lot of things, but we have to think, what are the outputs? So for mentoring, the output is transfer of information, transfer of techniques, getting people quickly acclimatized to what needs to be happening. But basically, we do that as a way of transferring expertise. And of course, that's helpful and necessary. But the outputs of coaching are increased self-esteem. Outputs of coaching are increased well-being. It's increased self-efficacy. So, increased confidence. So it really, that's what we need to look at for our educators. What is the thing we want most for our educators? Even as a parent or as a stakeholder or as a student, my view is we want educators who are self-confident, who have high levels of self-esteem, who are experiencing well-being, because their role is to look after the well-being of others as well, who take personal responsibility. That's who we want in our classrooms. And that's what we have to be careful of. You know, coaching actually is kind of revolutionary in that it stands against command and control systems. It stands against the idea that the best way of getting people to do something is to tell them what to do. So it is a challenging concept, and it does require. So my advice to schools or colleges or universities that are thinking about this, it's important for them to make sure that this is aligned to what their view is. You know, what you're going to get if you bring coaching into your organizations is more people taking responsibility, but you're going to get more people challenging. You're going to get more questions being asked. you're going to get more people open to talking about their emotions. You're going to get more people confident enough to say, I need some support here. So it can be incredibly powerful. So I always think there is a role for mentoring and there is a role for coaching. And I think it's too simplistic to say when you're an early career teacher, you need mentoring and then you need coaching. You probably need both from the outset. And may I just finish the four quadrants though? Remember I hadn't finished. So the third quadrant was students. The fourth quadrant is community engagement. And I think that there's hardly any research there. And we probably need to do more thinking about that. But I think that there's indications that that's also important for student success and well-being. What I mean is for the educational institution to have good links, to be a strong part of its community. So there's questions about how could we use coaching or a coaching approach as a way of connecting the educational institution to the community that it's part of. And I've seen, again, some really nice little initial ideas going on, some great pilot projects. And so in one place that I did some work, they said they wanted to connect the school to its community. So they went out to the community and said, for every person in our secondary school or high school, we would like to have a mentor or a coach from the community. And then the school itself, the college itself, provided that training to members of the community. And then the community members each had one student that they would support for multiple years, at least 3 years. And in that one, again, we were very explicit to say it's about mentoring and coaching. And that was part of the what we call the contracting, the agreement at the start of these conversations was, there'll be times when it'll be a little bit more focused on mentoring. There'll be times when it's a bit more focused on coaching. So that's one example. But there was another interesting one where the school actually sent its students out into the community. This was at the time we were switching from analog TVs to digital TVs. So a little while back. But there were a lot of people in the community who were just thinking, how on earth do I switch from this TV to that? And some of the senior students in this school were trained in coaching approaches, and then they went out into the community to support people to make that transition using a coaching approach. So some really interesting, much more work to do. Final thing I'll say about the global framework. So at the heart of it is student success and well-being. And when people ask me, what is coaching in education? I'll say it's coaching in education, and it's working well if you can track all the way to student success and well-being. So in other words, if you've got a school or a college and say, oh yeah, all of our senior leaders coach one another and they've been trained to be coaches, my question is, what impact is that having on the learner in the classroom? And I think we have to be able to make that link. Otherwise, we have to think again about it. The other question I get asked a lot is with these four quadrants, because there's the quadrant of leaders, of educators, of students, of community. Some schools will say, well, where do we start? And there's no answer to that. The school has to decide where do they want to have a difference? What is the difference they'd like to see? How are they going to measure that difference when they achieve it? And my final reflection, which is based on many years of working in the coaching and education sector, is that bolt-on programs hardly ever work. So if a school or a college or a university says, oh, we're going to do coaching because lots of people are doing it, and we bring it in and we say, oh, by the way, now we're doing coaching, that is ineffective. It's the bolt-on mentality really makes it very difficult for it to take off. Where I've seen it flourish is where it's really embedded into the school's strategic plan or a top priority. So if the school is saying, you know, the time, pastoral care time, that's that we really want to improve pastoral care, then it's the question is, how do we use coaching to do that? If they're trying to improve, you know, morale, communication, if they're trying to improve time that students are on task, I think it's really important to have a very clear purpose of why coaching has been brought in to the school. And then what I've seen is a school could start in the student quadrant by training students to coach other students. But what happens is then teachers, learning support assistants, librarians and others will come along and say, hey, we could benefit from that. Or if you start with teachers, then the educators are saying, wouldn't it be great to give the students these skills? Or we need our leaders to know about coaching as well. So there is that contagion effect that will only work if people are thinking, this is working, it seems to be making a difference. So that would be just a little insight, if it's appropriate to share, which is to ensure that coaching isn't brought in purposelessly, with a clear purpose and a clear way of measuring whether it's working, I think gives it the best chance of success.
And it needs to be sustainable also, doesn't it? It needs to not be something where people say, right, this year we're going to introduce coaching, and you know, you start doing it and you start to think about, you have to think about the plan for coaching, don't you? I think, like you're saying, it does have to start somewhere, but there has to be a structure to it and a plan to embed it throughout the school, and to do that over a number of years as well, so that it, you can, you know, I can go into a school and support them in starting to think about embedding a coaching culture, but it has to be sustainable. It has to be driven by the school itself eventually, and it has to become a self-sustaining model. Is that the case, would you say?
Absolutely. I've actually written in that original book, there was a chapter called Coaching Cultures for Learning. And I've done some further thinking about that, the concept of coaching culture. So one thing just for listeners to be aware of is cultures take many years to happen. So people have to go into it with that expectation that it's not something we're doing this term and then we'll have a new culture. It will take some time. And I came up with a theory which is has three components: democratic, voluntary involvement. And that is to do with how coaching initiatives are rolled out. To roll out coaching, it's very important that the rollout aligns with the values and principles of coaching itself. So coaching should never be imposed on anyone, is my view.
Yeah.
Choice is all about, the whole reason we do coaching is it's to respect educators and others in school. It's about being inclusive. It's about encouraging autonomy. So what I mean by democratic voluntary involvement is, one is it must be voluntary. So I don't see a problem with a school saying, we think this is important, so everybody has to come to one assembly or one training day to learn about it. I don't see a problem with that. That's what education is all about. But to then say, but every teacher must become trained, or every leader at this level must receive coaching or give coaching, goes against the very principles of it. So the voluntary means that it should always be a choice for people to receive coaching or to get fully involved in it. The democratic means that it should be available to everyone. It shouldn't ever be only these people are going to have it. But, you know, we live in the real world and schools have to make decisions. So prioritizing a certain group or saying we'll start with this, but eventually, I think the idea would be that anybody can access coaching. That's where organizations should be heading. And then the involvement bit is take advantage of the champions in your school. Allow anybody to be involved. If you're starting an initiative and somebody comes along and says, I'm really loving this, I'd like to try it, or can I get involved? The answer should always be yes. Nobody should feel excluded. So I came up with this concept of democratic voluntary involvement because I was seeing that, you know, sometimes you'd have the best intentioned educator who just get so excited about the possibilities of coaching that the way it's rolled out is, you know, trust me, this is good, let's just do it. But then that unfortunately undermines the process itself. So that, just as a reminder, the idea that when we roll out coaching initiatives, it has to be according to the principles and values of coaching.
My feeling as well is that once people choose to be involved and they experience coaching, they will sell it to other people as well, because they feel the power of it. If they've been empowered to do something, it's become self-promoting in a way, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And there's actually research to support this as well. So definitely, you know, allowing people to experience it is the best way of selling it, if we're going to use that term. It's a very difficult concept to convince people of if they don't experience it. On paper, it's a very difficult idea. So experiencing it is important. What the research also shows is that when people experience this kind of support, which is non-judgmental, it's supportive, it's encouraging, it believes that the client has the answers. When they experience this kind of support, they're more motivated to provide this support to others. So you're right that it actually builds momentum by itself. You just need to find who's interested in it initially. It has to be, I can't emphasize enough, Victoria, for me, coaching is a respectful intervention. It's the most respectful way, I think, we can support people's learning. So it has to be delivered in a respectful way. And then the way that it grows is people get curious about it. What's that person seems to be more engaged, etc. And the research also shows that one of the benefits of coaching is increases in well-being. And that has to be for now, but even from before the pandemic, I've always felt that that's the area that needed more attention, is the well-being of staff and of students and of leaders. So coaching, I think it's a myth to think that coaching is only about the outcomes. Probably the least important thing with coaching is that it helps you to achieve your goal. So that's one thing it does. The research supports that. That's the least important thing. It'll help you to plan your courses better. It'll help you to think about your career. It'll help you to plan for your transition. But almost the side effects of this, which is being treated like a professional, being given reflective time where you can sit and reflect on things, being trusted, feeling that you're valued, these are actually the more important outcomes that coaching can deliver.
And much better ways to achieve better well-being for staff than cake in the staff room on a Thursday.
Yes.
Yeah, not that we don't all enjoy cake in the staff room.
Yeah, the cake in the staff room is a great analogy, because that can be a tiny part of it, or cookies during meetings. These can be the little signs that we care about well-being in the school, but well-being goes well widely beyond that, as you've suggested.
I think one of the things that you alluded to there is the idea, and we mentioned it before, is that lots of staff in many schools, I think because of the accountability system that we live and work within, I say live, I think that's how I see teaching, it's the way that someone lives, isn't it? But you live in that, a lot of it is done to you, whereas coaching flips that on its head and says, what do you need? What are your wants? What do you want to do? And like you're saying, I think we've mentioned before on the show, it's much more about the process than the outcome. If you're involved in the process and you're engaged in that process, the outcomes will come anyway. And that's one of the things that I say about school leaders and leadership of schools. Focus on the process. Focus on the way that you do things and what you're doing, and you'll get the outcomes that you want in the end anyway. Now, we're waxing lyrical about coaching and how it can, you know, eventually have an impact on pupils. But why isn't coaching then the prevailing method of CPD in schools if all the research suggests that it can have such a great impact? why is coaching not the go-to CPD for the educational establishment?
Yeah, it's a great question, and probably I don't want to get political about it. That's just, I don't like to talk about politics. So what I'll do instead is say that there is something about what is identified as important. So I think if we said the most important thing we want for our young people during their educational experience is their well-being, if we said the most important priority is if there's one thing we're going to achieve by the time they graduate from, let's say, secondary school, it's that they have high levels of well-being, then I think we would operate differently. I think in advanced industrialized nations, and this is a big generalization, so I apologize, but I think that my worry is that we have said actually academic outcomes are more important than well-being. And if I say it, it sounds unbelievable, but when you look at the way we assess students, schools, educators, everyone in the system, it seems to be saying that really the most important indicator is academic outcomes. So if we put that first, then I can see that the idea of bringing coaching in. So one of the things that I find challenging is we'll talk about coaching intervention. And I might say it's really important to set aside an hour a week where educators can receive coaching or give coaching. And schools might say, well, we don't have time for that. Look, you know, the diet. But that's the question, is what are we making time for? This making time for coaching would be time for, you know, professional learning, time for people to grow and develop. So I think it's because of our overall priorities, because as you know, Victoria, I've noticed strong interrelationships between, let's say, the management style of a school in terms of telling, or, you know, let's say you have a school where there's a strong telling culture from the top of the organization. I see that sometimes influence the whole way that conversations happen throughout a school. So that's why this idea of coaching culture is just bringing a different approach to it can be transformational for educational institutions. And so people have said to me, well, if we do embrace coaching, what would be different? And that's a good question to ask. I think every educational institution should be able to answer that question before they start on the go. What's going to be different? I think the one thing, the tangible thing that will be different if it's embraced fully and works well, is the quality of conversations will be different. It changes the way we talk to one another. The way we talk to one another influences how we relate to one another. And how we relate to one another leads to increases in well-being. So ultimately, I think we can, or this is my hope, is that we can put well-being and academic performance, give them equal weighting. Because I agree that if people were to argue with me and say, well, it's not just about well-being, that's not why we send our young people to schools, I accept that. But I would argue that if we could put them on equal footing, then coaching becomes the natural approach to education. And I'll share something with you, Victoria. I wrote my book, edited my book, Coaching in Education, in 2012. It's called Coaching in Education, Getting Better Results for Students, Educators, and Parents at School. My dream is to write a book that's called Coaching as Education, not in education, but really kind of embracing coaching as a mode of education. What do I mean by that? For me, coaching is about creating the right environment in which learning can take place. It's creating the best possible environment for people to naturally want to learn. And I think that is, given where we are with technology, and this, I've got a lovely little poster in my room that says, just Google it. Now that we're in the Google generation, where young people, if they don't know something, they'll go onto YouTube and figure it, there's something there. or they'll go on to Google and they can find information. I think it takes some of the pressure off of us to say we need to get a lot of information through to create that space to say, in addition to what do I need to learn and how do I learn, how do I need to be? And wouldn't it be wonderful if our schools are training grounds, as it were, for how can we be with one another? What's the ways that we can be with one another that's actually good for our well-being? Ways that encourage pro-social behaviors, you know, and some of the ways we work in schools now don't encourage pro-social behaviors. They actually encourage competition. They encourage individualism. So that was a big question, but thank you for asking.
It is a big question, but I think there are answers to it. And I think I like to think that we're moving in the right direction. Thank you so much for joining us on the show today. That's been an absolutely fabulous interview. And anybody listening who didn't know anything about coaching before listening will be coming out of it with a really good understanding of what coaching is and how it can have an impact in a school or on an individual as well. So thank you so much for coming and sharing your time and your expertise with us today.
Thank you, Victoria. Let me just thank you again for the work that you do, because it's really important that we share our ideas, and the work that you do really helps to do that. But I also want to thank all of the listeners for the work they do. I think it's one of the most important jobs in the world to be an educator or to work in the education sector. And, you know, when I've seen great examples of schools that have embraced coaching and education, there's some wonderful examples out there. I feel, though, that that requires a lot of bravery by the leadership of that school. It's almost like they're setting that up despite the system. So that's what my hope for the future is, more alignment between the system and those schools that really want to embrace a coaching approach. So thank you very much, Victoria, and thank you to everyone who's listening.
And if people want to find out more about your work, where can they find you?
So if they look at growthcoaching.com.au, that would be where they can find most of my coaching and education related work. So that's growthcoaching.com.au for Australia. And if they just want to get a little bit more information about coaching and positive psychology, which are my areas of interest, then they can find a page on University of East London. So uel.ac.uk. And if they look for my name, there's my profile on there. You know, please just keep an open mind about coaching. You know, coaching isn't for everyone. It might not be the right solution every time, but I think it can many times be the right thing to do. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Christian. I want to say a big thank you to Christian for taking the time out of his really busy schedule to come and talk to us today about coaching. I really hope that if you are considering introducing coaching into your school, that this interview today has given you a really good insight into the benefits of coaching and what it could bring to your school, to your staff, potentially to your pupils and your parents even. And I think the one of the key things to take from this today is we want to move away from high stakes accountability. And the answer to that is creating coaching cultures, because when people experience coaching that is supportive and non-judgmental, they are more motivated to support others. And this is what Christian said in the interview. All of the research supports you are able to create much more supportive communities in your school through coaching. And one of the benefits of coaching as well, that's really important to emphasize, is an increase in the well-being of staff and students and leaders in your school. And that's what we're all in the business of. We're in the business of improving the life of our staff, because we look after them in our schools and we want to take care of them. And coaching is about creating that ideal environment in which learning can take place. And that means the learning of everyone in the school, all of the pupils, all of the staff, all of the leaders. And one of the things that, Christian said that really chimes with me, that I think is something that I would wish for the future, is that if we could give well-being and academic performance the same importance, it would make a huge difference in schools. And one of the things that I say repeatedly is that you need to focus on processes, not outcomes. And it's really important to do that. And you create the process, and if you get that right, the outcomes will come regardless. And coaching is one of the ways that you can really focus on being process driven and allowing the processes to lead to the outcomes that you want. I'm sure that you'll now be much clearer about the benefits of coaching. And if it's something that you're interested in, I'd just like to share with you the group coaching program that I've just created for women leaders in schools. It's there to support you as a leader. And if it's something that you think you'd be interested in, you can get in touch with me via the website at www.transformeducationcoach.com, or you can have a look on our Facebook group, the We Lead Well Facebook group. I'd love you to join us there and share your ideas on well-being and coaching. And if it is something that you're interested in, just drop me a line and I will be in touch with you. That's the end of today's episode. Thanks so much for listening. Take care of yourself, take care of your staff, and lead well. This episode of the We Lead Well podcast was brought to you in partnership with Transform Education Coaching, headteacherchat.com, and the Teach Well Alliance.